from the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Mark Thiessen's going to be here in a matter of moments, and Carly Shimkus coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're also following a story, these Gilgo murders, these Gilgo Beach murders. Whole country's been watching as bodies were found. Some hooker was trying to escape from a situation, got stuck in the mud and died. They go to fish her out, and it turns out they find a bunch of bodies 10 years ago. They never find out who the serial killer is until today. They find him on Massapequa, Long Island. The arrest has been made on Michigan Avenue and First. We're seeing live shots of it now. These are the type of things you never think are going to be solved, but they are. And they got the guy. And we're finding out more and more information, and we'll follow it. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We don't own a private jet. I don't own a private jet. I personally have never owned a private jet. And obviously, it's pretty stupid to talk about coming in a private jet from the State Department up here. Just honestly, if that's where you want to go, go there.
Well, it just shows hypocrisy. What does he not get? The green ruse revealed. The climate czar John Kerry loses his mind when called out for being a hypocrite. And more than that, as we examine this terrible politician and his misled mission.
Number two.
That guy is doing better in this space than any of us around this table could do at this.
The economic news of this week and inflation. That's a pretty good double.
Win, Jen. And I'm looking like what he is, a statesman on the world stage.
Yeah, so much winning. Just like exhausted by all of the winning.
Can you believe that this is the same country and guy we're talking about? So much winning. 2024, Joe has done nothing, anything, to make his party think he can actually run and win a re-election, except for a one morning show on another network. And the earth might be shifting under his feet uneasily. It looks as though many people on the left, not waiting for Joe to ramp up, are looking for other candidates. We'll discuss that as Ron DeSantis' backers get restless and Trump gains steam while Senator Tim Scott makes gains.
Number one.
Every time we see something at the White House that has happened that's unsavory or perhaps corrupt or illegal, the White House always seems to lie about it and try to cover it up. And no one ever gets caught. The most trained law enforcement security agents on the planet can't figure this out. It's very frustrating.
Nancy Mace, after getting briefed about why in 10 days they can't solve a cocaine problem in the White House. We did learn something new, that this wasn't the first illegal drug in the White House. There were three separate incidents. And we'll compare that to the Hunter investigation, which just doesn't seem to have an end. Just a lot of whistleblowers and eyewitnesses. Mark Thiessen joins us now, chief speechwriter for George W. Bush, Fox News contributor, knows the White House quite well, Washington Post columnist, best-selling author. Mark, can you believe we closed this case in 10 days?
It's unbelievable. You know, it's funny. There seems to be like a pattern here. Like they can't find the Supreme Court leaker. They can't figure out who brought like a bag of white powder into the White House. Can you imagine if it had been anthrax instead of cocaine? I mean, do you think they would have shut down the investigation this quickly? No, of course not. I mean, look, and here's the thing. So they start out saying it was in the library. Then they say it was up in the ceremonial entrance to the West Wing where the Marine Guards are. And then it turns out it was down at the entrance on West Executive Avenue. I went through that doorway every day for 6 years. Okay, I know that area like the back of my hand. There's to get there. If you're a visitor, like the Kareem Jean-Pierre is strongly implied this was some kind of a visitor or a guest in the White House. You can't just walk up to West Executive Avenue. It's a closed street inside the White House complex. It's used for parking for senior staff. To get there, you first have to go through Secret Service screening on Lafayette Square. You go through this booth where they've got you know, magnetometers, they've got X-ray machine, they have radiological devices, they have dogs. You know, that's a pretty that makes the TSA look like, you know, like a walk in the park. And who the hell would bring cocaine through that? What kind of person would put that in their bag and have the chance of getting caught by Secret Service to do that? So I just find it so unlikely that it would be just a visitor for someone outside the White House. And that people who have to go through that are outside visitors or guests of the White House and regular staff who
when you say outside visitors, they have to be a guest, right? Could I just come through?
They have to be invited in. And by the way, also, if to get invited in, you have to give your social security number if you're a guest of a White House staffer, and they do a criminal background check on you before you come in. So if you had drug offenses, that would come up and you would be barred from entering into the White House. We actually had people that we had did when I was at the White House, there were literally people that were being invited in for like the State of the Union who we turned out we couldn't let in because they had criminal records. Because the background check came out. So everybody who comes in, you give your social security number, the Secret Service runs a background check on you. So if you have drug offenses, you're probably not going to get into the approved to come into the White House complex to begin with. And then you bring a bag of white powder through a Secret Service screening? I mean, you've got to be kidding me. And if somebody did do that and it got through, that's a huge issue for security of the White House. That means if you could bring a baggie of cocaine through the Secret Service screening, that means you can bring anthrax through. That means you can bring all sorts of things through that could be dangerous. That's a national security risk. So I find it unlikely that it was somebody who went through there. Though it's possible that got through. So who can get to that West Exec entrance that doesn't have to go through Secret Service screening? Cabinet secretaries and motorcades pull up, and they don't get stopped to go through that screening when they do. Senior staff of the White House who have parking on West Exec, like I had, I would just drive my car through a Secret Service gate, show my ID, and be guided right in and park on West Exec. I didn't have to go through that screening. And family members of the president don't have to go through that Secret Service screening. Those are the only people who and foreign leaders, right? Other than that, everybody has to go through a security screening. So either it's one of those – to somebody in those three groups who didn't have to go through screening and felt confident that they could bring a baggie of cocaine into the White House, or they went through the Secret Service screening and the Secret Service failed to detect this, in which case we've got a national security issue on our hands.
So here's Kevin McCarthy yesterday, cut two.
Do you think now that Secret Service says they've ended their investigation, is there a role for Congress to play here?
Yes, because they should end their role. You can't tell me in the White House with 24/7 surveillance in a cubbyhole by a situation when you don't know who to deliver. I mean, the American people think that's a farce. You should get an answer to the question. It just seems to me in America today, anything involving Biden Inc. gets treated different than everything else, and that should be the case.
So what?
And it is the case in everything. It's nonstop. So let's pivot over to what's happening abroad. The president.
Can I say one more thing on that, though?
Yeah.
That it's not just an issue of finding the perpetrator. It's finding out whether our defenses were penetrated, and that's the Secret Service should be investigating itself. Because that means if it went through the Secret Service screening, they failed. It should be somebody other than the Secret Service who's investigating the Secret Service and whether they did an adequate job protecting themselves. So
but they don't have bomb-sniffing dogs. They don't have drug-sniffing dogs, right?
They have bomb-sniffing dogs. But, I mean, the point is you can't bring a bag of white powder through Secret Service screening into the West Wing. How can that be allowed to happen? They don't even know what it was. They don't know what it is. It could be anthrax. It could be something to use to threaten the president of the United States. That's a failure of security on the part of the Secret Service.
So let's talk about what the president's doing overseas. He's trying to, I guess, kind of get away with that. We'll bring people out and they'll deny it. Couldn't be more disappointing. Christopher Wray this week just denying it, not even acting concerned, except for he was nailed on the Richmond situation with the Catholic investigation. Besides that, he should be outraged about what was happening with his agents calling what was revealed in the Twitter files, so to speak. But he's not. So let's talk about the president of the United States. He gets out of town just in time, and he says this about the war in Helsinki, Finland. Cut nine.
I absolutely guarantee it. There is no question. There's overwhelming support from the American people. There's overwhelming support from the members of the Congress, both House and Senate, in both parties, notwithstanding the fact there's some extreme elements of one party. We will stand together. The American people known for since the end of World War II and the formation of NATO that our security rests in the unanimity among European and transatlantic partners. Us. And so this is, you know, no one can guarantee the future. but this is the best bet anyone could make.
So he continues to think, like you and I, we feel the same way. This is a necessary conflict. Ukraine yep. is fighting like warriors. We're providing the armaments, the bulk of it. But yep. he does not explain that to the American people. You, General Jack Keane, Lindsey Graham, they explain the reason for this war. He never explains it. And when people go against it, the extreme elements of the party, it's not the extreme elements of the party. There's a lot of people who, clear-thinking Republicans, who say, I just don't want to support this. So what you do is have a pushback and explain it. He doesn't feel any urgency to explain it except revelations like we're out of bullets.
Yeah. So I did a big essay in the Washington Post laying out the America First case for Ukraine, laying it out in put aside a solidarity with the Ukrainian people. Why is it in America's interest to do this? And when I showed it to my wife before I sent it into the Post, she said, this is the speech you would have written for George W. Bush. And I was a light bulb went off. I was like, exactly. This is the speech the president ought to be giving, laying out why it is in America's interest. He gave a speech in Vilnius about this, right? And he spent more time talking about climate change in that speech than he did laying out a strategy for victory. How to, not just, you know, we'll stay with them until the end. How are we going to actually help them win? And what is the plan for a durable peace once the fighting ends? He didn't explain any of that. And he didn't explain to the American people who are watching this. He's got a national audience on every network why it's in our interest to help Ukraine. He never makes that argument.
And it's maddening because he leaves it to other people. Nobody's even doing his side. And you know, when it comes up to the election year, there's a lot of Democrats in battleground districts in states. And there's a lot of Republicans who are going to run against funding this war, which I believe is against our national interest, just like pulling out of Afghanistan was against our national interest. You may want to end the war, but what's in the best interest of the country? Make the case and tell us. And if we believe it, and we there's enough proof there, we'll believe you. There was no push to get out of Afghanistan. There was just ridiculous. We want to end this war. If you explain to people why we need a presence there, they would get it. But they don't even give people the opportunity to hear the other side and make their own conclusions.
Americans are not isolationists. They're reluctant internationalists. They are willing to support American leadership on the world stage if someone explains to them why it's in our national interest. And so here's the thing. If I was working in the White House and planning this, I'd have the president give a major address in prime time explaining why it's in our interest to be there and why it's in our interest to do that. I would have him going to every congressional district where there are building weapons that are being sent to Ukraine to demonstrate how many American jobs are being created by our aid to Ukraine. I would go to the districts where Poland is sending its old Soviet MiGs to Ukraine and is buying F-35 fighters from us. I'd go to the district where they're producing the F-35s and say, this is how it's helping American jobs. There should be a strategic campaign to build American support. And second of all, to lay out a vision for how we win.
Exactly.
There's no vision for victory. There's no vision for a durable peace. You know, he's making the Ukrainians fight this war with one hand tied behind their backs. He's giving them enough weapons to not lose, but he's not giving them enough weapons to win. And so they're fighting this offensive. What do you need to win a counteroffensive? You need tanks. We're not giving them. You need long-range artillery and precision weapons. We're not giving them. You need fighter jets to give you air power. The Russians have fighter jets. They're bombing Ukrainian positions. The Ukrainians don't have them. All they got is these old Soviet MiG fighters that are you know, thousands of tons heavier than our current planes and are not nearly as accurate. Why are we not giving them? The British and French, for crying out loud, are giving them long-range weapons now, but the U.S. isn't. It's such a disgrace how he's handling this.
And by the way, he's got total support from the media. You watch him on the world stage. You watch him mumble through that speech. You watch him not go to dinners because he wants to rest. And you watch him almost fall up the stairs.
That's going to the NATO working dinner. I was with Bush in 2008 at the NATO summit where he pushed for Ukraine and Georgia to be invited into NATO, and NATO refused. And there was a working dinner where they had this debate. It went 2 hours over because Bush was so insistent in pushing them to do this. And Biden didn't even show up to the dinner because he was tuckered out. What? If you want evidence that this man is not up to the job, how do you not go to the leader's dinner? This isn't a ceremonial dinner. It's a working dinner where business gets done. He's not there.
Of course, and he did this before at the last, I think it was the G7. This is why he could do it, because most media has his back. Listen to this, cut 16.
The speeches the night before in Lithuania was commanding. The press conference, and even to go back a second time to the Finnish reporter who continued to question America's commitment to Finland as part of NATO. And he's like, no, let me go back to what, you know, let me go back and correct you. But I also want to know, does anybody know who decided that the trip would end in Helsinki? Because it was a genius move. You know, that's actually not clear to me if it was the White House that said, hey, I know, let's go back to Helsinki five years to the same day, same place. It just couldn't be a more, or if that was, you know, if that was baked from the Nordic leaders themselves. And still just like so breathtaking, that moment from Trump. I still gasp when I hear it.
Me too.
And that contrast for Biden to be, you know, not just defending, not just showing American leadership, but also just be so great at at nailing that speech and that press conference.
So isn't it great? He just nailed everything.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't Trump's best moment. but look, here's the thing. Biden. Yeah, they're covering for him. And, you know, and then also, by the way, the Washington Post, I think it is, reporting today that they almost withdrew the language on inviting Ukraine into NATO one of these days, maybe somehow, because of Zelensky criticizing it, because they were so angry with Zelensky. They treat it like he's like, we're not giving aid to Ukraine as a favor to Ukraine because we're just good guys and we're doing them a favor. It's in our interest to stop them. To stop the Russians. It's in our interest to help them. So you don't punish him for being ungrateful. He wants to get into NATO because it's good for his country, but we want him in because it's good for our country.
Yeah.
Again, nothing is driven by national interest in their decision making. They never make the case on national interest. And despite that, Brian, the good news is that two-thirds of Republicans voted in Congress this week against amendments to cut off aid to Ukraine. The isolationists are marginalized in the Republican caucus as a bipartisan majority.
That could change with this type of lack of communication. Mark Thiessen, thank you so much. When we come back, I'll take your calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. 1-866-408-7669. We're following a lot of these stories. One story of which is, I don't know if you guys have been following these Gilgo murders in a big mystery over the last 10 years. Did specials on it, hour specials on Fox Nation. You've seen it on various crime shows throughout the network. So it looks like they've solved the crime and they got the killer, at least one of them. We got details. It happens to be Massapequa, Long Island, where they arrested him. Works in Manhattan. Graduated local high school in 1981. And looks to be a sadistic, twisted killer. If these allegations are correct and they got the right guy. Unbelievable. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Cohen Shimkus joins us when we get back. We'll expand on this big story. CNN is actually running it, that Joe Biden is looking to be replaced.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'd say another thing that I think the White House is delighted with, people banging this kettle drum all day long. Joe Biden is senile. Joe Biden is infirm. Joe Biden has lost his mind. He's 7 hours ahead. He stands up there. He doesn't have the press conference, went for more than an hour. He's taken hard questions on foreign policy and looked pretty good.
Great speech the night before. Not like he didn't have a tough schedule the day before.
Right. Tough schedule, tough draft. He gets in there, does a long press conference. Not only is the contrast with what Trump did 5 years ago, just in general, the guy's up there handling questions on the world stage and without really missing the beat. If I want to run a tape to refute the absurd notions of Joe Biden's senility or his infirmity. I run this tape if I'm the White House and say, that guy is doing better in this space than than any of us around this table could do at this.
On top of that, the economic news of this week and inflation. That's a pretty good double.
Win, Jen, and looking like what he is, a statesman on the world stage.
Yeah, so much winning. Just like exhausted by all of the winning.
Yeah.
So obviously they're making fun of Trump at the end there, but I'm astounded. We watch him shuffle around. We watch him go to bed instead of having that working dinner Mark Thiessen just brought up. We watch him stumble through a speech he needed 48 hours to read. We watch him basically not finish his sentence, just drown out. Now, we saw the CBS Kiss-Up article where they called how the other leaders like the grandfatherly Tony takes. Really? Grandfatherly Tony takes? It seems as though they're even mocking him in Saudi Arabia on comedy shows. But we'll see. I would love for him to show a tone. It had nothing to do with being 80. It just matters how old you are and how you act. Listen to what other clear-thinking people had to say, like Victor Davis Hanson, Cut 20.
I don't think he's going to be the nominee. I don't think he's going to be able to. And I think they know it. And they welcome the fact that he's not going to be able. And I think that explains why all of a sudden this obsequious and toadish press is leaking everything.
And he going on to say, this is what he's seen on the world stage, Cut 19.
Well, it's symptomatic of what we've seen, that he's in decline at a geometric rate. So each session that we see him abroad becomes more embarrassing. And it poses this question, what are the Democratic Party, what are they going to do? And they want him to finish his term. And I don't think they want him to run for re-election. So that explains why we're suddenly getting leaks about his cognitive liabilities, about scandals about the Biden consortium, intemperate treatment of his granddaughter. All of that is designed, I think, to persuade him that he's not going to run again.
Right. That cocaine in the White House, arrogance, quick temper. And then you watch him on the world stage. It's amazing, Cole Shimkus, that I was just playing while we were on the air on the other channels. They just think he's done the best job ever overseas.
Yes.
So how do you explain that?
Well, how do I explain why they think he's done the best job overseas? Well, you know what? I do think that President Biden does deserve some credit in keeping NATO together. And not only that, but adding to the alliance. That's a good thing. With that said, when it comes to scheduling, when you have an aging president, that's a challenge. And clearly, the White House looked at the schedule and realized, okay, can't do the NATO dinner because he needs to prepare for the speech and the...
Or he told them.
Well, one way or the other, but it didn't happen. And I think that they wanted him to nail the speech and nail the meeting with Zelensky. And, you know, he did how you would expect him to do. It was fine. But I don't know if he necessarily shines on the world stage. I was listening to some clips of him from Finland yesterday, and he got testy with the press at some point and couldn't hear some of the questions. And the White House went back and said, well, the room was echoey, but everybody else could hear the questions being asked. So there was a little bit of back and forth and confusion there. I do think that this trip showed his age in a way that past trips for him have not. So he's only getting older, and it's really starting to show.
So I want you.
I guess it has showed for a while.
And Carly, just to talk about him being short, he never does any press conferences, town halls, and interviews. Once in a while, Fareed Zakaria. Okay, so listen to this.
My second question, on that note, to Mr. President Niinistö, hearing this answer that no one can guarantee a future, are you worried that the political instability in U.S. will cause issues in the alliance in the future?
Let me be clear. I didn't say we didn't guarantee it. We couldn't guarantee the future. You can't tell me whether you're going to be able to go home tonight. No one can be sure what they're going to do. I'm saying as sure as anything can possibly be said about American foreign policy, we will stay connected to NATO. Connected to NATO, beginning, middle, and end. We're a transatlantic partnership. That's what I've said.
Right. Yeah. So that was one of the comments that he made in Finland. And that is not terrible. It's not the worst. But, you know, I think that there is probably a more diplomatic way of answering that question. And then you have the Axios report where they called him Old Yeller. And we're learning that behind the scenes, people are afraid of him, which is the exact opposite of the Biden that he presents in public, where he's grandfatherly and kind and we'll take you by the shoulders, or, you know, touch you on the shoulder, you know, which is another issue entirely. But it's the image that he wants people to view him as being just, right, you know, a grandfather. And we're kind of hearing an opposite now.
A couple of things. When it comes to NATO, I don't think he deserves almost any credit for keeping NATO together. And here's why. The people that deserve credit for keeping NATO together are the Russians. Because the Russians provided, for the first time in 75 years, an actual invasion of why NATO was formed. They wanted to stop the Soviet Union from grabbing the rest of Europe. Like, mm-hmm, they grabbed the Eastern Europe, and they never were supposed to, in a deal that was brokered after World War II. So they go, well, don't worry about Russia. We're just going to have Nord Stream 1. Don't worry about war. Hey, America, don't worry about it. Don't. I know you have natural gas. You kind of worry about your self-interest. We're going to do Nord Stream 2. What did he do? He did Nord Stream 2. He green-lighted the rest of it.
Yeah.
So next thing you know, if you are addicted to Russian oil and gas, it's not in your interest to really stand up against Ukraine. But this invasion was so comprehensive and so massive, Poland, Germany, others said, my goodness, we have to do something about this. Do you think it was a phone call, Carly, from President Biden that convinced Finland and Sweden to do this for the first time in 70 years?
Well, if you ask him, the answer would be yes, because he is taking credit for Sweden and Turkey wanting Sweden to be in the alliance.
The only thing he's done is try to get, because you need a unanimous vote, he tried to get Turkey to green light it, because Turkey's in their own self-interest. They're trying to play both ends and say, guys, okay. But it was Sweden and Finland who said, by the way, can you let me in now? Just like you.
Yeah, you know, I do. I think you bring up a good point. But on the flip side, you know, when you are in charge, say for this, it always happens this way. You give presidents probably more credit when things go a certain way, and blame them too much when things go an opposite way. So if NATO were to break up under, and Biden's the president, you blame him for that, because the United States, not you, just people in general, because the United States is the strongest country in it. So maybe there's some outsized attention being positive attention being brought to Biden because there, two more countries were added to the alliance. But I also think that there is some brokering that happens under the Biden administration that has kept the union together.
I think we've been extremely slow. A lot of people have died because we waited on HIMARS. We waited on the Patriot missile.
Yeah, well, that's a separate issue with the
war.
But it's
the same,
thing.
It's like, if you're going to support the war, support the war. Mm-hmm. And now they're like, we're considering attack-ems. Every day people are dying while you consider. One of the things is, we only got 4,000. How many do you want to give? Just tell me how many you're going to give. 200? Fine.
Yeah. And
Do it. There's nothing to talk about. Make the decisions. The military is known to make decisions. Good or bad, they got to make decisions. They'll execute. Execute. There's not enough time to go to the beach on the weekend.
And one of the big conversations on Capitol Hill right now, and it's received support from both sides and also pushback, are the Biden administration agreeing to send the cluster bombs. And I don't understand the criticism there. I mean, first of all, the dud rate is much lower than the cluster bombs that Russia is already using. It's got like a 25% dud rate. And I think that, you know, the moral equivalency there is just not accurate, because Ukraine wants to use them on Ukrainian territory to defend its people. So I heard yesterday that those cluster bombs are already in Ukrainian soldiers' hands.
Right. I hope so. But the thing is, when he comes out and says, we're doing this because we're out of 155 ammo.
Mm-hmm.
Really? We're out of javelins. We use a 13-year allocation on javelins, okay? We have not given the weapons to Taiwan. Have you seen a problem? We have weapons production issues.
I know.
What have you done to increase weapons production in a capitalist society where you could purchase that with our dollars and say, American people, we're going to have to do this. This helps our country.
Absolutely.
And then guess who else wants to buy these weapons? All NATO members want to start converting, getting rid of the Russian crap, mm-hmm, and getting our stuff. That is, they actually write checks.
And Brian, when you think about the defense bill, it's a cut to defense spending when you take inflation into consideration. I hate hearing that. I will never understand that, especially when there is already an active war in Europe, and then you have the looming Chinese-Taiwan threat, and you could already see the devastating headlines now. We run out of weapons because something happens in China. And you look back to the summer of 2023 and say, what was going on then? Oh, well, nothing? Really? Mm-hmm. You could see it playing out in front of your very eyes.
And the fact of the matter is, you have the Russians lost 15 generals. They're one of their most favored generals, Popov, has been eliminated because he was critical. So they got rid of him, and he cut a tape saying, I said goodbye to the troops. So he cuts a tape, and they love this guy, just like they like Prigozhin. They loved him. okay, the Wagner Group liked him, so they're gone. He's speaking out. This place, Russia is falling apart.
Russia is falling apart. But then you hear these news stories constantly. I'm hearing news stories that the counteroffensive isn't going as well for Ukrainians as people originally thought.
Certainly
it
not
might.
The speed.
So they were dug
in. Well, they dug in, number one. Number two is they have no air cover. So they've been neutralized by the fighter jets of the Russians. Number two is, while they were in winter and moving forward on Bakhmut, which they failed and lost tens of thousands, mm-hmm. they were making these cement shelters.
Which Russians were? Oh.
So the Russians were not only fortifying their land, their line with people, they're actually making flat-out fortifications.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why the cluster munitions would work. They'll actually flush them out mm-hmm. and making these huge minefields. So when you can't get air cover, you're moving slow, then you got to worry about getting hit so you're not moving as quick.
So what does Russia need then to balance it out?
What do the Ukrainians need?
I'm sorry, yeah, what do the Ukrainians need?
Could use the F-16s. We're going to start training them in the fall. And so what happens is we're not giving it to them.
Why not? Why is that the red line?
The rest of NATO is going to give them theirs.
Oh, okay.
So we gave them permission to do it. And they go, okay, but we don't know how to fly them. We go, in the fall, starting in September, we'll train you.
I know.
Abrams tanks.
It's just so September. Slow. I know.
There's no excuse for it. This is America. We could do all this stuff quicker mm-hmm. than everybody else.
Yeah.
So that to me is legitimate criticism, but fortifies people like Matt Gaetz and other clear thinking Americans who don't feel as though this is in our interest. But you're giving them the opening to say incompetence. You're giving the opening to saying what is going on here. You don't explain this to anyone. So when you're in an election year, and then they say, we are looking at our funding now. What have we given to Ukraine? We've given them $44 billion. What could we have done with that? Those are ads to be run against a moderate Democrat in a battleground state.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, they're off. And I just think it's in our national interest to do this.
Yeah.
But the president's, I think, arrogance and the people around him to feel as though they don't have to explain it to people and counter-narrative is –
So what you're saying is some of the reason for the pushback in terms of how much money we've given to Ukraine is because people don't understand how important this war is to the United States.
He never explains it.
And he never explains it. And then President Biden or former President Trump says that he could end the war in a phone call. That's what he has to say. And I think that one of the most interesting things that happened to Ron DeSantis, do you remember a few months ago when he came out with his stance on the war? And he's a military guy and he says that he doesn't think fighting this is in America's best interest either. He's since walked that back, but I saw that. I viewed that as a mistake.
He says it was a territorial dispute?
Yeah.
Okay. So Mexico takes 20% of Texas? Territorial dispute. Just make peace. Make peace. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think he wants that one back.
But
probably.
I think he actually did kind of walk it back a little bit, but he also knew that the person he was writing to was totally against the war. And if he wrote that letter like Mike Pence would, Nikki Haley would, he thought he'd be marginalized.
That is true. But what?
Do it anyway.
I just don't believe that he feels that way. I don't believe, just given his military background and the way he voted in Congress, it just came across as he was playing to the base
of
the party. And he wasn't saying what he actually thought.
When we come back, Crowley Shimkus on what's happening in 2024, there is going to be a shift. When you say shift with Ron DeSantis towards an area in which I think he will really thrive. I'll explain it. But Donald Trump is a substantial lead and he's got the best team he's ever had by far, doing better against Biden head to head as well. But we'll talk about what DeSantis plans on doing to start chipping away. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The cocaine caper will never be found. For me as a member of Congress, it's very frustrating. Every time we see something at the White House that has happened that's unsavory or perhaps corrupt or illegal, the White House always seems to lie about it and try to cover it up. And no one ever gets caught. No one is ever held accountable. And it's very frustrating to see the most secure location on the planet with the most trained law enforcement security agents on the planet can't figure this out. It's very frustrating. And now a case closed and we will never know what happened.
That is Nancy Mace, who just got a private classified briefing, Crowley Shimkus. about the cocaine found at the White House. 10 days, can't do it, cold case, we're done.
Blows my mind.
Crazy.
Blows my mind.
Especially with Hunter Biden there every day.
I know. I don't want to sound reactionary, but a crime was committed at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, listen, if it wasn't a Biden family member, you would think that President Biden and Karine Jean-Pierre would be outraged. I mean, because he is, you could view him as a victim in this whole thing. What if it wasn't cocaine? What if it was anthrax or something else? And then you have to worry about, God forbid, copycats. And now that this person was never found, would that lead to somebody trying it and having it be even more serious? I mean, you don't even want to put that out there. But these are things that should be going through the White House's mind and spinning this and say, you cannot be doing this on government property, let alone the White House. And yet it's just completely radio silence. And then you have Jamie Raskin, who said that he's satisfied with the investigation. How could you be satisfied with an investigation where they don't find out who did it?
It's
just such a weird reaction. It makes it feel like a cover-up.
Well, these are the same guys who were just outraged about everything Trump did. Everything. What's going on with the Saudi? I heard he was going to build a big building in Moscow. I thought he was going to Saudi Arabia. Why is it now all of a sudden you have cocaine in the White House? Believe me, Adam Schiff would not have been off camera. That would have been the only topic last night on every other channel. A quick thing, you're feeling about the Hollywood strike. So you got the writers on strike and the actors on strike at a time in which no one's going to the movies. Are you crazy? I'm like, this is the worst time for them to have a strike, don't you think?
I know. I haven't really thought a whole lot about this story.
And
I didn't think about it like
anymore.
That. But yeah, that's true. And I was talking to somebody whose name I won't mention because I don't know if they want me to say it, but they're making a movie right now. And he was telling me that it's a TV show. He was telling me I was like, when is it going to come out? He's like, I don't know, because the writer's strike is happening. And now the actors are striking too. And there's an AI tie-in. And I didn't even know Fran Drescher, the nanny, was the head of the Screen Actors Guild.
Right. I did not know either. She's a bit of a yeller. We know she was just taking a selfie with Kim Kardashian and then also explaining the urgency of it. Not a good look.
AI, Fran Drescher, Kim Kardashian.
What does AI mean?
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. This hour, we're going to be joined by Mayor Suarez. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to speak to a very special congressman who wants to weigh in on all the testimony this week, Congressman Nathaniel Moran of Texas. So he's going to weigh in. He's on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He saw what happened yesterday with John Kerry and the Judiciary Committee. Absolute arrogance. And the mayor's going to be with us running for president. Very successful mayor. He's got the most unique way of raising money I have ever seen. I don't know if it's allowed, but it's fascinating, and I'll let him explain it to you. But just keep in mind, too, we're following another story. Stunning news at Gilgo Beach on Long Island, a murder mystery that maybe has lasted 10 plus years, where a bunch of, I guess you could say, night workers, strippers, whatever you want to call them, found dead in Gilgo Beach in the most dense area you can imagine. They finally solved the murder, at least for most of them. There was a major arrest in Massapequa, Long Island, of a guy that graduated from local high school there, was an architect, and looks as though he's been accused of being a serial killer. So we'll give you that, and let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We don't own a private jet. I don't own a private jet. I personally have never owned a private jet. And obviously, it's pretty stupid to talk about coming in a private jet from the State Department up here. It just, honestly, if that's where you want to go, go there.
They did go there, and it just shows your arrogance. Unbelievable. Green ruse revealed. Climate czar John Kerry loses his mind when called out for his hypocrisy. And when he's not on a yacht, he's on a private jet telling us to change our lifestyle and stop using gas cars. Not a chance.
Number two.
That guy is doing better in this space than almost than any of us around this table could do at this.
The economic news of this week and inflation. That's a pretty good double.
Win, Jen. And I'm looking like what he is, a statesman on the world stage.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Exhausted by all of the winning.
That's exactly what I was thinking, statesman on the world stage. I wish it was true. I looked at Barack Obama as a statesman, Bill Clinton as a statesman, not partisan. Joe Biden does not look like a statesman. But if you look at the other channels just covering for him, you might think that. But I think people are wising up to that. Meanwhile, on the right, and there's a big movement now to get someone except Joe on the left, on the right, Ron DeSantis might be changing things. We'll talk about his new tactics.
Number one.
Every time we see something at the White House that has happened that's unsavory or perhaps corrupt or illegal, the White House always seems to lie about it and try to cover it up. And no one ever gets caught. The most trained law enforcement, security agents on the planet can't figure this out. It's very frustrating.
No kidding, Nancy Mace, after she got briefed. Well, that was quick. Cocaine found at the White House, and in 10 days it becomes a cold case. Really? More Biden family protections. Did we learn anything new? This was the third illegal drug found in the Biden administration at the White House. Well, that's new. Let's bring a presidential candidate with a lot of charisma, huge upside. Miami Mayor Suarez. Mayor Suarez, welcome back.
Brian, it's great to be with you, like always.
So it's great to hear from you. I want to get to your unique way of getting donors and getting on that debate stage in a moment. But first things first, how would you gauge the president's last few days over in Lithuania and then over in Helsinki, Finland?
You know, I think the president's foreign policy has been a total catastrophe, a total disaster. It's not like you could say his domestic policy has been any better, but his foreign policy has been a policy beginning with the, you know, incompetent withdrawal from Afghanistan, where we saw people literally, you know, falling off of wings, where we had to abandon, you know, billions of dollars of military equipment, where the Afghan government collapsed shortly thereafter. Then the inability to respond to threats in our own hemisphere after the July 11th protests, which we just marked the 2-year anniversary in Cuba. Nothing was done. Nothing was done to help the Cuban people. And what we've seen is a rise of socialism in our hemisphere. So it's been one catastrophe, after another. I can't imagine anyone to characterize that as being a statesman. I think that's sort of laughable. He's someone that has not had a coherent hemispheric strategy, hasn't had a coherent global strategy. And what's happened is our enemies are emboldened. Let's be clear, right? Putin, who has an ambition, just like Xi Jinping, who have their lifelong goals and ambitions of how they view their country, are using this as the best case opportunity for them to prosecute those ambitions. That's why I believe that Putin made the decision to go into Ukraine. That's why I'm sure every single day Xi Jinping is thinking about how he can take Taiwan, which would be a massively disruptive event for our country because 90% of advanced microchips are being produced in Taiwan, and that impacts a tremendous amount of the consumer goods that we use on a daily basis.
And by the way, you know all about that because you've made Miami Silicon Valley. It's been one of your approaches to say, hey, how would you like low taxes, better weather? Get out of Silicon Valley. And they've come. That's part of your calling card. The other thing that you pointed out, which is not appreciated, is we allowed that uprising and did nothing to help the Cuban people. And for those people who say, well, Cuba's not my problem. It's been a problem in America America's had a problem with that since the 60s. You're right. And just so you know, if you're upset about China having a spy station 90 miles from our shore, then you should have wanted America to play a role and be a beacon of hope and maybe intelligence to allow them to stand up. Because if that Cuban government had flipped, you would not see China at our doorstep, correct?
Absolutely. And it's not just a spy base. Now they want to have a training base, right? So they're upping the ante on Cuba, but it's not just Cuba too. Like I think Cuba is just sort of the head of the snake of a rise of socialism in our hemisphere. When you consider Mexico as a left of center government, when you consider Brazil, Colombia, Argentina, Chile, I mean, let me tell you why it matters to us. It creates immigration pressure on the U.S. People who are fleeing desperation, who are fleeing poverty, where do you think they're going to go? Where do you think they're going to want to go? right? There's only one option. And so, you know, if we don't engage, if we don't start figuring out, instead of sending $1 trillion to China on a net basis, on a net annual basis, right, having a large part of our supply chain in the hands of an increasing adversary, right? Unless we start undoing some of that and start using those resources, by the way, they're not tax resources, they're our own economic resources, right? If we use those resources in a more intelligent fashion, which is, by the way, what China's doing, they're using their Belt and Roads Initiative, which is our money, basically, to invest it in our hemisphere, in Africa, and in the former Soviet bloc countries, to try to create more power dynamics in their favor. We've got to undo all that. We've got to do it immediately. We've also got to shore up our supply chain. But if we start powering China and using those resources to start creating relationships in our hemisphere, then what happens is we don't have the same poverty and the same incentive for people to come to this country. And that in and of itself slows the immigration crisis that we're seeing at our southern border.
All right, so we're talking with Mayor Suarez. Mayor Suarez, I just want you to know what you're up against if you do get the nomination, because we watched the president shuffling overseas, lose his temper in Helsinki. You know, got some easy questions about the future of NATO. To be honest, I think any 12th grader who studied American history would know the reason why you stay in NATO. But that's fine.
Yeah.
At least he did a press conference, so I'm not going to be critical. But to think he oversees was strong while he missed a working dinner at NATO because he was too tired to give a speech in which he wrestled with. Listen to this, cut 14.
I'd say another thing that I think the White House is delighted with, people banging this kettle drum all day long. Joe Biden is senile. Joe Biden is infirm. Joe Biden has lost his mind. He's 7 hours ahead. He stands up there. He doesn't have the press conference, went for more than an hour. He's taken hard questions on foreign policy and looked pretty good.
Great speech the night before. Not like he didn't have a tough schedule the day before.
Right. Tough schedule, tough draft. He gets in there, does a long press conference. Not only is the contrast with what Trump did 5 years ago, just in general, the guy's up there handling questions on the world stage.
And they actually got more effusive after that. Is that amazing to you that people could assess things the same way?
It's amazing. I think basically saying that someone, the president, was in their minds coherent. What a shock! Right? What a surprise! This is something that is being used as a sort of a compliment to the president. And you know, it's crazy. We deserve better as a country. You know, I got in. I'm in New Hampshire today. I got in at 2:30 in the morning because of weather. I got up early in the morning. I'm grinding through the day, spending time with people in Manchester and in other parts of New Hampshire. And you need to have that energy, that vitality,
of course,
that articulation. And I always just tell people, you know, and I thank you for this opportunity to communicate with your audience. I would tell them, because I know we're going to get to this real soon, is to go ahead and donate on my website, just a dollar, which is all I ask for, francissuarez.com, just donate a dollar, so that I can get on the debate stage and continue to have this important conversation about the future of our country, which is what I know people want to talk about.
Mr. Mayor, you also have a very unique idea. Inter Miami of the MLS has done the impossible. They've gotten the best player in the world to play soccer there. He's arrived in shopping at the Publix yesterday, and there's going to be tickets to his first game with Inter Miami. This team, which is at the bottom of the division, seemed in a shambles, is now acquiring great players and will be the number one attraction, include from baseball on down to NFL training camps. And what have you done for people to get involved and have a chance to go to that game?
Well, I'm going to tell you what I've done, but I want to tell you what I've done to help bring Lionel Messi. You know, and I think the first thing it starts with is I, as mayor, had struck the deal to bring MLS to the city of Miami, okay? And we did this very differently from every other sports deal in America. And I think this is important because this is the kind of president that I would be. I think it's the best negotiated sports deal in the history of our country. You know how much subsidy we gave them? Zero. Okay, we gave them $0 in subsidy. I think Buffalo gave the Bills a billion and a half dollars. I think Tennessee gave the Titans $1.2 billion. Nevada is giving, you know, their team $1 billion.
Raiders.
The Raiders. And they're getting billion-dollar ass all over the country. We gave it $0. The city's going to make $2 billion in revenue from the deal. Okay, and we created a platform where we could attract the best player in the world from his former team, Barcelona, that was trying to get him, and from Saudi that was offering him, you know, incredible amounts of money.
Almost so $1 billion.
Right. So what does that mean about Miami? That means that in a global competition for the most talented person on earth, we won the competition because we have low taxes, because we're safe, and because we do good deals. So one of the things I'm doing as part of the campaign is we want people to, or we're asking people to donate a dollar to the campaign through Venmo at Suarez 2024. And we are going to be allowing two people that win this competition to be able to go front row seats to watch the first Messi game, which I believe is July 21st. So I think it's a really cool thing that we're doing.
So if anyone anyone comes in and donates a dollar plus to your campaign, they'll be eligible to win the lotto to go to the game.
Yeah, and I don't. We've got to be careful what we call it because it's not really a lotto, but they'll be eligible to get the possibility of two front row seats to the game.
That's unbelievable. I like Vivek Ramaswamy came out and said, anyone who gives to my campaign and raises money, I'll give you 10% or 20%. This is also innovative and creative, too. So if you want to go to the number one attraction in the country, in the world, and sit in the front row, give a dollar to Mayor Suarez, who had a lot to do with him coming there. Also, I think it's important to point out that Miami failed in the MLS once. They were there. They were one of the original members, and they failed. They were in the NSL. They failed. So you're going to try to do what no other team has done, have a successful soccer franchise built the correct way.
We're doing it the correct way. MLS is being well run by John Garber, who is now the president and CEO of MLS. He's doing a phenomenal job. I think, like you said, it's I think the second now sport with the most average attendance of all the sports behind football. I mean, it's doing incredible. Let me just reemphasize, donate a dollar, Venmo at Suarez 2024, at Suarez 2024 to enter into this giveaway. And it's going to be something great. I know, Brian, you're going to do it right after the show.
Right.
I know how much you want to go.
The thing is, I can't do it. I get fired, though, Mr. Mayor.
I know. You got contractual prohibitions.
Exactly, yeah.
I know that if you could, you would, because I know how badly you want to go see that game.
Well, I'll put it this way. I've seen you in action. I know how much this country means to you and your family. And anyone who supports you won't regret it. That's what I could say. I got to do this whole go through the election season. Mayor, you're also doing something, too. Your super PAC is touting a chance to have college tuition covered for a dollar donation.
Yeah, and as you know, obviously we can't coordinate with super PAC, so I can't get involved in that process. But I do, you know, having seen it just like you did, I think it's a unique and interesting idea because I think, again, as you get creative to try to get people to support you and to listen to your ideas and to give you an opportunity to get on the debate stage so you can talk more about why their future, why you are the right person to guide their future. I think doing things that are positive, like giving them an opportunity to have a scholarship, giving them an opportunity to go watch, to go sit front row at a Messi game. I mean, those are things that are real, that people really care about, that they enjoy, that they can appreciate, that they can get value from. And I think that's something that, you know, it's interesting that what's great about this requirement is that it's making the candidates focus on everyday people. Right, we're not just doing the high dollar dinners that no one has access to. Right, we're actually we're actually going after the everyday person. To just telling them, give us a dollar, give us a chance. Let us be able to motivate you and inspire you. And I think there's something.
We
really
only have 20 seconds left, but Mr. Mayor, what are the Uyghurs?
Well, it's funny. It's spelled Y-G-Y-A-R.
I know.
So I've always called it Uyghur. But they are a minority Muslim population in China, about a million of them in Xinjiang that are in concentration camps and are shot if they try to escape and are basically spend all day indoctrinating them. It's very sad. I gave the keys to the city to Enes Kanter Freedom. I don't know if you know Enes, who has basically been fighting the NBA because they have been playing footsies with China, as so many U.S. companies are. And they don't even talk about these human rights violations. By the way, human rights violations are important across the world, not just in China.
Absolutely. And before you do business, it matters, even if you promise to put solar panels up, John Kerry. Mayor Suarez, best of luck down the road, and we'll look forward to watching Messi play in your city.
You got it, Brian. Thanks a lot.
Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So listen, welcome back. I got to tell you, Massapequa was known for Brian Setzer with the Stray Cats, all the Baldwins, the good and the bad. You're known for the Baldingers, the fantastic three players, three brothers playing the NFL at the same time, and Joey Buttafuoco, sadly. And now they're going to be known for the home of a serial murderer, a 1981 graduate of Berner High School. They just arrested him. If it is, in fact, a conviction, he's right now been accused of being a serial murderer of the Gilgo Beach murders, Allison. Does that blow you away? I'm watching scenes from my town while I'm on the air, getting messages from people I graduated high school with, asking me if I knew him.
That's crazy.
A serial murderer. I mean, you never know who's in your class. But that's when they had two high schools in my town. So that's the other side of town, where I also had a lot of friends. Listen, when we come back, I'll be able to open up this talk about what happened yesterday on Capitol Hill as it relates to John Kerry. He was finally called out. And what is happening with Joe Biden? It looks like he's being called out, maybe off the campaign trail. I'll explain.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In the past decade, as you know, we've reduced emissions here in the United States, but in the same time frame, China's emissions have increased. The pollution that's coming out of China.
Correct. That's exactly why we're working at what we're doing.
And you said yourself, quote, earlier, this is a global, universal issue, and we don't want it to become captive to other issues. But I'm curious, when you say that, if you're ignoring these other issues like my colleague brought up here, human rights issues, would you agree that human rights issues are also global, universal issues?
Absolutely.
But you want to keep them separate when you're talking to China, is what you said earlier. Is that true?
What I said is we don't keep them separate in terms of our priorities.
No, that's exactly you said President Xi and President Biden agreed at the outset to separate out the climate issue.
Correct.
So it wouldn't get caught up in these other issues.
Correct.
So were you correct?
That doesn't mean you don't talk about them.
Yes, it does. It means you're going to forge ahead and do a deal, despite the fact that they should not be doing a deal with us. Do we have any standards as a country? They're going to put spy ships over our country. They're going to hack our Commerce Secretary and our Secretary of State in May. We wouldn't find out about it until June. We're begging to get a meeting, and then we got our climate czar over there saying, don't worry about the torturing, the organ harvesting. We just want to be able to do solar panels and have more electric cars. It's crazy. Congressman Nathaniel Moran was asking those questions, and he joins us now. Congressman, it must have just been maddening for you to question somebody who doesn't seem to get it.
Brian, it was so frustrating yesterday when I was talking with Secretary Kerry. Incredibly hypocritical for him to sit there and, frankly, be an apologist for the Chinese Communist Party and to talk about at one point during that testimony how good they're doing and how many strides they've made. And he really does have a one-track mind, and that is to push this climatology, this religion of climatology for himself on American businesses, and then go over there and soft pedal with the Chinese Communist Party and allow them to have an advantage over the American people in so many different ways. It's hypocritical.
Right. And to finally get him in front of you, he wouldn't actually reveal his staff either. He goes, I got my two aides, but I'm not telling you everybody else. Really? You're not telling us?
Oh, I know. It was ridiculous. He said, you know, we've got this process at the State Department, and we'll talk about that through that process. But this is the process. He was before us under oath to answer those questions. He wants to hide what the real mission is, who's working behind it, what the scope of authority is that he has as effectively the czar, this special envoy on behalf of the president. He reports directly to the president. He wouldn't give us hardly any information yesterday because he wants to hide it from the American people.
What I also think is astounding, do you know his lifestyle? You know he's got a yacht, and you know he's got a plane. So when he wants to relax, he goes on both those places to think about different ways and his policies, intentional. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he doesn't really think it through. He only thinks about what he considers the ozone layer, which, by the way, is thickening and emissions have never been lower. But I don't want to digress. So having said that, does he know what he's doing is hurting the average American in the prices of oil and gas? Does he know that the exchange of this is national security? Does that sink into him?
He knows it. He won't admit it. And he doesn't care. And that's the problem, is he has this one-track mind. It's his life mission, effectively, to have the American people bend over backwards to pursue this climatology agenda, despite the fact that it's killing American businesses, it's hurting American families, it's really doing so much harm to the growth of our economy, and it doesn't make any logical sense. And on top of that, we're using tons of slave labor out of the Xinjiang region of using the Uyghur people in China to get the raw materials that's needed for these solar panels, and they're preferring all that. They don't care. They want to turn a blind eye to that and say, oh, we don't care because we're pursuing this climatology change.
And think about this idiotic statement, Congressman Rand. I know you might have to run to vote, and our audience totally understands that. We appreciate the time you're giving us. But, Congressman, also understand that we are refusing to do the mining ourselves in Minneapolis and other places in Nevada. We have the rare earth. We have the lithium, we have the cobalt, but we don't want to do it because it's not good for the environment. But it's good for 7-year-olds with spoons to go in the Congo and try to dig it out of their mountains and their terrain.
You see it?
That's fantastic.
Thanks. He's actually have to pause there. I ran in there to take one vote to the House, and now I'm back with you totally. And but you know, I agree, Brian. It's just ridiculous how far the left has gone to ignore what China is doing and to bend over backwards for them in spite of the fact that it's hurting American people. I just right. cannot understand it.
So here's the question to John Kerry about trusting China from Congressman Issa, Cut 22.
He told this committee that trusting China and climate change promises would be stupid and malpractice. Without directly using that quote again, would you generally agree that it still would be malpractice?
I think trusting a lot of the players who've been involved in this, in government and also private sector, is not the smartest thing in the world because we've been burned.
So what's the point? We've been burned before in the past because they're not doing what they said they're going to do. China has not done anything they said we're going to do on any level, even on phase one of the trade deals. Have we gotten any grain? Have we gotten any grain purchases for our farmers that you know of?
No. And what I talked about with him yesterday was, so how are we going to actually keep them accountable? He's like, well, you know, we're going to talk to them. Well, that doesn't work because we know we needed to verify what the Russians were telling us during the Cold War, and now we're effectively in a Cold War with the Chinese Communist Party. We cannot just simply trust their word that they're going to do what they say they're going to do, frankly, because they have a different agenda. Their strategic objectives are not in line with the strategic objectives of the United States people and the United States economy. They want to be the world dominant economic power, and that is to our detriment. And so to simply go in hat in hand and say, okay, we're going to trust you, make these promises. What we need to say to them is, you know what? We're going to quit giving your businesses advantages. We need to stop what's happening here in America. When you catch up, then let's talk. He's not going to do that.
Right. You talk about his lifestyle and his own hypocrisy. Michael Waltz doesn't usually get into stuff like this, but this time he was determined to get to the bottom of this. Cut 25.
In exchange with Mr. Mills, you just testified under oath that you never owned a private jet. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to enter into the record an article here from February 15th of 2023 that the John Kerry family private jet was sold shortly after accusations of climate hypocrisy. Mr. Secretary, do you stand by that testimony
I personally, yes. My wife owned a plane and stole the plane.
You flew on
Not in a number of years, but I have flown on it, sure.
And this article is not then inaccurate, that your family owned a plane, you flew on a plane. Here's the issue.
Yeah.
This isn't some kind of partisan gotcha. When we are asking Americans to make serious sacrifices as we transition for the common good, and your family and or yourself are flying around on private jets, that smacks of hypocrisy. It actually hurts your cause.
He has no answer. He got angry after that.
Yeah, and he was angry throughout the committee hearing because he was called repeatedly on the carpet for not following that golden rule of what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You know, when Mike brought that up, that was a line of questioning I want to talk to him about as well, because you see how careful Kerry is with his language. I didn't personally own a jet. Well, he owned an interest in a company that had an interest in the jet. I mean, there's parsnip language, and that is how he gets by, and he's done it for years. He did it as Secretary of State and back as a senator, and he knows how to parse that language so that he's very careful about how he words things. But the truth is, he had an interest in a plane, and they use that in a hypocritical manner all over the world, jet setting, while they're asking the regular Americans not to do that, but they're not going to lead by example.
It's just, it's insane. So this is what this administration's about. Oil and gas, we're still going to use it. We're going to get somebody else to sell it. We're going to get somebody else to refine it to us. And then we're going to start doing all these things to make us more dependent on China. Now, over the last week, we've had revelations that our Commerce Secretary was spied on in May. And we found out about in June. They've gotten all the emails hacked. Microsoft has told us. And our Secretary of State. Yet we're still having meetings. We still sent over our Treasury Secretary. We still sent over our Treasury Secretary of State. And they're still looking to set up a meeting with the head of state. Are you okay with that?
I'm not okay with that. We need more action, less talk. And this is where I'm going to have to kind of conclude our interview, because I've got another vote that I'm going to have to go into. And then we're going to
What are you voting for on the
NDAA. We're voting on the NDAA this morning, but okay. We've got one. And they're in two-minute successions. But here's what I'll say about our foreign policy. It always has to be strong. It has to be strategic, and it has to be steady. And what the White House has not done is any one of those three by its actions. It will talk a good game, but it won't actually act in that way. The Chinese surveillance balloon is a good example of that. The fact that we're not protecting our own borders. We've got so many examples where they act out of a position of weakness, not out of a position of strength. We're the United States of America. We're the greatest nation that has ever been on this earth. We need to act like it, and we need to lead with strength and steadiness and strategy instead of responding to the whims of a president who has climatology at the very top of his list on everything.
Go get him, Congressman Moran. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Comey. Take
care. Just real quick, I'm just watching the arrest now, and the picture's now out of a guy in my town that is a serial murderer. I don't know. Is that going to hurt the value of my home?
How close do you live to him?
2 miles?
Yeah, so it's probably far enough.
Probably far enough.
Josh was showing me, though, the house that they got him out of on Zillow. It's listed for over $600,000.
Yeah.
It looks like a shack.
It does look like a shack. I mean, the town is way overpriced. I mean, I like the town, but it's so hard to get an apartment there. You can't get an apartment there because, you know, in the back of a house or anything, like usually in more towns. And number two, there's North Massapequa, there's East Massapequa, there's Massapequa Park, there's regular Massapequa, there's South America Road Massapequa. That is by old grammar school. It's an area, it's almost on the borderline of Farmingdale. Over old grammar school, it's now is a police academy, which Hawthorne School. So they have state streets. So state streets go up and down this town, makes it easy to find out. And then there's a little bit of a break, and then they pick up on the other side of the town. So people must be shocked. I know people in that area, some of the finest people. And this is one of those areas where you know your neighbors, because all the homes are right next to each other. They're on roughly 60 by 100, or sometimes 40, sometimes 80. But you know everybody. So you have actually sidewalks. So you know if you're one of those things where you can steal in today. You're down the block, you feel like you know everybody because it's one of these bedroom communities, I think, built around World War II. It began to really flourish, got the railroad there, and a lot of weird stuff happens. Again, Joey Buttafuoco was there with Jessica Hahn up to his antics. And then you have the Cars, lead guitarist. He was there. Brian Setzer, Stray Cats, he was there. You have Ron Kovic, born on the 4th of July, portrayed by Tom Cruise. He was a big pro-Vietnam protester. He was paralyzed in the war. He lived there, went to my grammar school. So a lot of weird things happened in Massapequa. This is not one of the good ones.
It's not, but do you think
Jerry Seinfeld, obviously, from Mass Speaker.
Obviously. The way the neighborhood set up, like, we're going to be hearing from a lot of the neighbors. Like, we always thought he was a weirdo. He was the nicest guy.
I just saw someone. I was between the transition. Mm-hmm. I was between coming up here, watching in the elevator. We have TVs in our elevator, watching people in the neighborhood. I don't know him, but it looks like someone might meet. So it's just crazy. They got him out of town. They had to move quickly. I was just talking to somebody with familiarity with it. They had to move quickly because they thought he might be leaving. He might be onto it. So they ended up getting him last night.
Which is, I mean,
they were probably going to move in 2 weeks.
Wow. That's crazy. They're able to track him down after years, but we can't find the cocaine in the White House.
Unbelievable, right?
Right.
And they said that they found it off his DNA, off beer cans. So it matched something that they found over there. So evidently they got him. They were suspicious of him. They zeroed in on him. And then they find a way to get the DNA. So DNA is go to the person's garbage.
Not bad. They did that with the Idaho killer, too.
Yeah. Don't drink beer if you're going to kill people.
Do a cocaine.
There's so much to learn. No, it's really bad. And a lot of these people, again, if you murder somebody that doesn't have a lot, if you're a stripper, prostitute, they don't have the background. There's not a big push by family members for the most part. Let's get answers. So that's why maybe this is part of it took so long. You know who was all over this? Dr. Michael Bodden. He was on it. We were going to go out to the Gilgo murders, but then it just went cold. They felt as though they had somebody in Suffolk, and then it went ice cold. They changed police commissioners, and everyone's like, okay, let's just wait on this. But now they got it, so we'll see what happens. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. One of our great affiliates is WABC, so they're all over the story, too. Brian Kilmeade.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm just thinking, Josh, do you think it's time to know more?
More to know.
I guess I'll take that as a yes. Lionel Messi is proving that he's a man of the people ahead of his big move to enter Miami in MLS. He is now in Miami. He was spotted in a supermarket chain at Publix on Thursday buying groceries, a lot of sugary cereals, loaded in the cart as he was headed for the checkout. Fans stopped him to take pictures. Are you surprised he'd have sugary cereals?
I mean, he's probably getting for his kids. He was out with his wife and three kids. They're here in the U.S., right, the first time. They're probably trying all the fun stuff they wanted to.
I know. I cannot wait for him to start playing. I'm not going to judge him until I see him on the field. They also got a few more players. Next, Dan Patrick blasts ESPN, LeBron James for needy ESPY spectacle. Listen to what he's saying, because, you know, LeBron retiring and not retiring is not a story. Listen.
You know what's breaking news? If he retired. Not that he's coming back. It just is needy. And you don't need it. I want publicity. Don't forget about me. I don't want to cheat the game. Just play.
He's an annoying superstar.
Greatest of all time.
Right? He says, I don't care how many points I score or what I can do, get on the floor. The real question for me is, can I play without cheating the game? People just don't, even people with like arrogance more than this, pandering.
Yeah, I know. I agree. Just always making it about him. Like, get over it.
He stays out of trouble. He's a good family man, fantastic parent, a little over aggressive with his kids. His kids going to USC, a lot of pressure. Next. Black equity director called white supremacist after speaking out about college radical agenda. This in a lawsuit. The lawsuit filed by the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism said the De Anza Community College created a racial hostile environment for Dr. Tibia Lee and then fired her because she wasn't being the right type of black person. Is this unbelievable? Namely, Lee did not support an extreme critical race theory agenda to decenter whiteness. How dare you not decenter whiteness?
I know.
You've heard me get very mad at other people that don't decenter whiteness.
Yeah, it's one of your top issues.
Right. So, again, this is part of what makes me feel good. People pushing back of all races and colors against idiocy. I'm anti-idiot, and I'm going to go on the record. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Don't forget One Nation Saturday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time featuring me.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
I believe that's my cue. At least it was in rehearsal. Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. We're going to be talking with Shannon Bream, according to her people. You don't get a chance to talk to big anchors before they come on the air. So you just have these layers of hangers-on, corner men, cut men, people like that, mostly men. And then Sean Stix Larkin will be with us. He is going to be hosting a brand-new show on Fox Nation. Remember Live PD? It was fantastic, a big hit, but suddenly it wasn't cool to like Cops, so they took it off the air, even though it was the number one syndicated show in the country. He was one of the stars of there, along with Dan Abrams, who does a great job and created it. Now he's host of Crime Cam 24/7 on Fox Nation. He's retired Tulsa Police Lieutenant and KRMG listeners. You probably know him well. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We don't own a private jet. I don't own a private jet. I personally have never owned a private jet. And obviously, it's pretty stupid to talk about coming in a private jet from the State Department up here. It just, honestly, if that's where you want to go, go there.
Well, you just got back from China. How'd you get back? Green ruse revealed. Climate czar John Kerry loses his mind when called out for his hypocrisy, and more as we examine the terrible politician he is and the misled mission he has.
Number two.
That guy is doing better in this space than any of us around this table could do at this. At that,
yeah, on top of that, the economic news of this week and inflation. That's a pretty good double.
Win, Jen, and looking like what he is, a statesman on the world stage.
Right, yes. Mika really watching his back. 2024, Joe has not done anything to make his party think he could actually run and win a re-election, despite what you just heard from MSNBC. And the earth might be shifting under his uneasy feet as DeSantis backers get restless and Trump gains steam and Senator Tim Scott makes gains.
Number one.
Every time we see something at the White House that has happened that's unsavory or perhaps corrupt or illegal, the White House always seems to lie about it and try to cover it up. And no one ever gets caught. The most trained law enforcement security agents on the planet can't figure this out. It's very frustrating.
Well, that was quick. Cocaine found at the White House in 10 days. It's a cold case. Can't break it. Impossible to find out. More Biden family protection, you bet. We did learn something new, that this is the third illegal drug find at the White House under Biden. Nice. We compare that to the Hunter investigation. A lot of rumors, a lot of but no culprits. And that's where we begin with Shannon Bream. She's the anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal analyst and author of the book, The Love Stories of the Bible Speak. I need you to speak now, Shannon. Your thoughts about not knowing where the cocaine is.
I mean, I don't know how we wrap something up in 10 days and we're just done and we're never going to get
an answer.
I mean, I think to most average Americans out there, they think it's pretty dang shady. We talked about this. You don't just walk into the White House. It is very controlled. We do know, or we should know, who is going in and out, who is leaving, who has access. Some over on the Hill are like, okay, if it's 500 people, then drug test all of them. I mean, I don't know if that's going to work. You know, we're a couple weeks into this now. But the fact is, there is a limited universe of people who were able to be in that area. And, you've heard the White House suggest, oh, there's construction in the area, so people wouldn't have been in the situation room. Like, are they blaming the construction workers? I don't know. But we should want to get answers, and we should want to know, because what if that was a bag of something else, of something deadly, whatever? Certainly, we would backtrack the path for how that baggie got in there. I mean, I can't imagine if it was something really destructive that we would be like, oh, 10 days, can't figure it out, not enough DNA, the end.
So a couple of things that people should know that have been to the White House. So people say, well, there's cameras everywhere. Ari Fleischer and others said there's no cameras everywhere. But there's cameras at the entrance. That's true, correct?
Oh, yeah. Entrances, I mean, there are definitely eyeballs that are keeping track of things.
So there's cubbies there with keys. This one was the only one with the key missing.
I mean, the thing is, and what they said about the investigation is they went several days, around this time frame to find out what it was. So it's not like, hey, we looked on Sunday morning, there was nothing in the cubby. Then Sunday night, we found it in the cubby. I mean, there could be days and different people involved in this. But again, if it was something deadly, I can't imagine after 10 days, we'd be like, oh, sorry, we don't know who brought the anthrax. We'd figure it out.
Here's Byron Donalds, cut four.
There's a lot of things that are happening in there I'm not totally aware of. But one thing that makes it tough to discuss this is that you are talking about some of the security protocols at the White House, so it makes it difficult to really talk about this publicly. But to me, the thing that's lost on me is with all the surveillance that we have at our capability, we don't know who left a dime bag of cocaine in the White House. Like, or we can't even, like, narrow it down. That's the most frustrating thing overall. The Secret Service is charged with securing this facility. And so that's why I think for it to essentially be dropped off, because you're not talking about anything that has destructive capability, then that I think they're looking at it as outside their purview now.
So, and he's frustrated by it, too. And they're just flabbergasted. They just said this comes to an end. I don't know. If it was my White House and I found that there and I know it wasn't mine, I'd be outraged. I would say we've got to save protocols. I wouldn't take the blame, especially if it's not mine.
Right. And that's the thing. Wouldn't you want a name, even if it's a staffer, even if it's a high-profile person, whatever, you want to be able at the White House to say, like, I'm sorry, it's XYZ person, because otherwise people will just endlessly speculate about how this wrapped up so quickly and why we don't have a name. It's in the White House's interest to get us a name. It really is. So their unwillingness to do so or seeming disinterest in doing that just raises more questions. And then we're told also, oh, by the way, the Secret Service found pot there twice last year, too. So, you know, people who, you know, run their homes this way would probably not be able to get away with it.
Right. So, by the way, I heard Hunter Biden had a drug problem, and I believe cocaine, not good enough. They had to weaponize it, which is make it crack. So he was using it. We got it on video. Now that I know the email's real, I didn't know because I thought it was classic Russian disinformation for a long time, as you know. I was now that we know that's real. So that could bring one and one equals two together. But we know that the lawyers for Hunter Biden, get this, the lawyers for Hunter Biden have warned Truth Social owner Donald Trump to stop accusing their client, because it could make their put their lives in jeopardy. So I think that we should stop criticizing Donald Trump, too. So if let's do a cease and desist on all criticisms of both men. Do you think I can get them to agree to that?
I do not think you can get an agreement. Listen, you're good. I don't know if you're that good. If you are, we're going to send you over to sit down with Putin and Zelensky and get that thing under control. I mean, if you're that level of master negotiator, possibly. But the thing is, listen, the former president knows when he throws these things out there, you got to be careful. Nobody has any idea if Hunter was anywhere near this stuff. I mean, you've got people out there saying, like, well, of course, that, you know, he's at the White House. We think he's there a lot. So that's going to be a question. Again, that's why I think it would help the White House to say, no, it was actually, you know, John Doe. It's this other person. But, of course, the former president is never going to be able to resist, you know, taking shots at the Biden family, because I think he rightfully argues if it was his family in the spotlight, and many times was, the press sometimes seem to have a different set of roles with his kids.
So Hunter Biden doing international business deals, and they're getting closer and closer to finding out who in the Bidens benefited from it. Can you say, Joe, here's Miranda Devine. This plays into the whole cocaine and cover-up. Cut eight.
When Patrick Ho was rounded up by the Southern District of New York, arrested and charged and then convicted on bribery allegations during his trial, the very same prosecutor, Dan Rickenthal, he asked the judge to not to basically redact the Biden name from the evidence before the jury. And he said there was no point having it. And this was one of the reasons that Gal Luft says that he felt he would not get a fair trial in New York.
Because it was a joke. What's your thoughts about that? Were you hearing that for the first time?
Yes. And listen, Miranda, I can listen to her all day because of the accent alone. But she's been digging on the story for a long, long time. Again, during the time period, we were told there's nothing there. But remember, although there were a lot of questions like, oh, this is Russian disinformation, when people were asked point blank, are these Hunter's emails? Because remember, we had Tony Bobulinski and other people who were parties to those emails saying they're legit. We never got the blanket, oh, these definitely aren't any of his emails. I mean, we couldn't get that from the White House. So not surprising that Miranda and others would continue to unravel threads. I mean, she has been at the forefront of this and has raised some very interesting questions that I think need to be answered.
So 2024 is here, and we see this story on CNN. A growing number of top Democrats and donors are reaching out to potential replacements for Joe Biden. as a nominee. Several aides of top Democrats have allegedly told the outlet that the lack of more robust campaign activity than the current president has displayed isn't actually running against, despite he's not running against anybody, despite the insistence that he is. As a result, they are keeping their options open. Democrats within Biden's circle claim, however, that this is just a bit of an underestimating Joe Biden. And he won 2020 the same way. And we say all of a sudden this New York Times story comes out that he raised $72 million. Mm-hmm. But this also a senior producer over at that rival network said the conversation keeps happening. Quiet whispers on the sidelines of events of text, emails and phone calls. Top donors are reaching out to other people. What have you heard? You live in Washington or in an, right. You work in Washington, living in around there.
Yeah, and it's a tricky thing because if they're seen as going around the vice president, Kamala Harris, how do Democrats deal with that? Because she is a history maker, and they've made a lot about the fact that she's the first, you know, female and African-American, and it's very special and important. But, you know, our polling all shows, not just ours, but I mean everywhere, shows that she has worse ratings than the president does. So if they're unsure that he's going to be able to stick it out and be on the top of the ticket, and they're throwing her overboard with this too, because if you're talking to the Newsoms and to the other, you know, Pritzkers and other people out there, there's very much a sense that there's dissatisfaction. We know that the polling shows us that people don't want President Biden, even within his own party, to run again. But if there aren't debates or anything else, you know, these people want a backup plan. A lot of these donors.
Let's go to the GOP side, where we understand DeSantis might be, and they denied it since, losing a key backer. He has paused his support for DeSantis because he feels as though he's getting impatient. They're not seeing any movement. I'm talking about Ken Griffin, a Miami-based hedge fund. He runs Citadel. He's frustrated with DeSantis' lack of progress. And now DeSantis, reportedly, his camp is shifting strategy. They said that they're going to start putting DeSantis, been weighing a shift in strategy, allowing him to do multiple sources of his interviews and go into more hostile platforms. I think that would be a great move because I think one of his assets is his intellect, his knowledge, and his ability to spar. I think that would be a good move.
Yeah, a lot of people do, because look at somebody like Vivek Ramaswamy, who came out of nowhere. I mean, he is a political outsider, newcomer, 37-year-old guy. But from the beginning, when he got in and people were like, who? They couldn't pronounce his name. They didn't know who he was. You know, he has been willing to engage with any and every media outlet. They show up and put a camera in his face at CPAC. He's like, great, let's stop and have a chat. I mean, he's willing to engage with people. And look at him, 8 to 10% in some of these polls out of coming from zero name recognition 3 or 4 months ago. And I think, you know, those are the kinds of things that the DeSantis people are looking at. He's very controlled, as you know, a lot of times when it comes to media, and he was very early on. He's opening up a bit more, but I think they realize if he's really good at this, and you've seen him in some of his press conferences, especially during COVID, where he had to bat down things that were being said about him and his policies that weren't true, he's actually good in that scenario. So it confuses some people as to why he hasn't been out there doing that more. And they say, listen, we're staying all in on these early states. There's got to be an upset in there somewhere in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina to show you actually have the ability to beat President Trump, or it's over. So they're focusing there on the early states and trying to reassure donors and backers that they're in it for the long haul.
Right. Shannon, our mutual shows are hurting both our mutual relationships. Do you want to know how?
Why is that?
Because I don't go to brunch anymore because your show is on in the morning. And then I want to watch the replay at 2 p.m. on Fox. And then you don't go out on Saturday night because you're watching my show at 8, One Nation. So that's aggravating your husband.
But it's perfect timing for me because I got to go to bed right after that anyway. It's like my final bit of show prep, but my alarm's going off at 4, which I know is like sleeping in for you. So right after your show, I just tuck myself right in with a hot cup of cocoa and it's lights out. Not that your show gives me lights out, but I feel fully prepared after your show.
So can you give me an idea of what I'm going to be watching on Sunday?
Yes, you are going to be watching Senator Tom Cotton, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things, including the fact that, you know, they're fighting over the defense spending. They just passed the House version of this bill, but it's got all kinds of things in it that the Democrats say there's no way we're ever voting for that on abortion and, you know, woke policies and all these different kinds of things. So we'll talk about that. I want to talk to him more, too, about the Ray testimony this week. Weiss, is he going to come testify on the Hill? And we are negotiating with the White House for someone special that I hope we will be able to announce right away. It is not President Biden. I will tell you it is, you know, step below, but we're working on it.
I'm Vivek Ramaswamy, Bill Hemmer, and Dana Perino are doing the co-host quiz, which is phenomenal. I'm going to have Griff Jenkins in studio. I think he's going to dress in his wetsuit that he used to surf. I thought that was an interesting choice. Yeah. And Jesse Waters is going to talk about his new show, and that's going to be key. Now, question for you. I know you love The Bachelor and Bachelorette. Will you be watching the golden version of these, the aging Bachelor?
Is that really a thing? I got to get up with the Kelsey.
Allison, it's a real thing, right? Yeah. I was reading that too. It's a real thing. Would you watch someone date over 60?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 70? I think it's beautiful whenever somebody finds love. Why not? Yeah. If it's engaging and sweet and cute. Now, like if there are a bunch of, floozies, that's why I stopped watching The Bachelor and Bachelorette, because not all of them are, but a big percentage are not there, quote, Brian, for the right reasons, as you know.
They're not doing reality shows for the right reasons. It's a scandal, Shannon. We got to get to the bottom of this.
I think the older people to have better judgment and to be there to truly find love.
Yeah, I don't want to be put on. I want to know that they're looking for someone special. We'll get to the bottom of that. Shannon Bream, thanks so much. We're going to be watching Fox News Sunday.
But I'm going to be watching you first on Saturday.
That's all we need. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Bill Clinton-level word parsing, what you just saw there today. Now, keep in mind, John Kerry, when he was confronted publicly last time, it was in Iceland, when he was there, flew on a private jet to Iceland to pick up an environmental award. And he gave the original defense the equivalent of, do you know who I am? I'm so important, I have to fly a private jet. I'm trying to save the climate. Like, he doesn't have time to be with the masses on an airplane. Well, what he did today was he said, I don't own a private jet. And we don't own one, meaning his wife owned one until last year. And now he says he's only been on one flight. That goes with a lot of contradictory evidence. There's evidence that shows since the Biden administration started, he's been on several dozen private jet flights.
So that is pretty substantial. That is ClimateDepot.com founder and publisher Mark Morano talking about the arrogance and hypocrisy that John Kerry put on display yesterday. And if you did it, he gets all arrogant. He goes, why are you asking me about private flights? I came from the State Department. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the flight over to China. We're talking about the one over to Europe. We're talking about going to Davos. And you'd sit there and want people to sacrifice. I personally think you came from money. You married into the Heinz fortune. You have a yacht. You made your wife sell her plane. I don't believe you're on JetBlue. Go live your best life. You know, you're 100 years old already. But if you're going to go out and try to change our lifestyle, you have to live the lifestyle you're jamming down our throats. Gas is more, diesel's more, because you want to make that transition. You don't want us to buy. You don't want us to drill. You don't want any pipelines. You want to go up to other countries and make them do the same thing with absolutely no enforcement. At the same time, going out in a yacht on every vacation and flying there to begin with kind of bothers me a little. What about you?
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, Sean Stiggs Larkin, is a host of a brand new show, Crime Cam, 24/7 on Fox Nation. As you know, you probably saw him from Live PD, retired Tulsa Police Lieutenant. People on KRMG probably know you, listen to you over, watch you over, and do your job over in Tulsa. Sean, welcome.
Hey, pleasure being here.
And
thank
welcome
you so
to
much.
The Fox family.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Happy to be here for sure.
So tell me what we're going to be seeing with, and you said it debuted last Friday, with Crime Cam 24/7.
Yeah, Crime Cam 24/7, just as you mentioned, it debuted last Friday at 6 o'clock Eastern. Basically, there are 85 million surveillance cameras out there. So if these things are running 24 hours a day, you've got over 2 billion hours of footage a day being recorded somewhere. And the show has basically taken incidents of crime that have been captured on video, everything from surveillance cameras, ring doorbells, cell phones, body cameras from police officers, dash cams, and so forth. And we are showing some of the wildest things that have happened out there. You're going to see heroic actions by police officers. You're going to see citizens that stand up for themselves, for their rights, protect their homes and so forth, and citizens that stand up for one another, all captured on tape.
So how do you know what to pick, where to find this stuff? I mean, who's going through it?
You know, I hope that the poor production crew that's working on this thing isn't sifting through 2 billion hours a day. You know, listen, we actually have a link where viewers themselves can send things in if they're aware of something that's out there. Obviously, between social media, YouTube, news clips, things like this, stuff that starts circulating around and grabs the attention of anybody working on this show, we're going to take a look at it.
Right. So, and we'll see that. You guys, you kind of burst on the scene. You never meant to be a TV guy, right?
Absolutely not. No, listen, I was an athlete in high school. I wasn't the guy doing drama or, you know, I don't have any acting or singing skills, anything of that sort. Just an absolute fluke deal. I became a police officer when I was 23 years old there in Tulsa. And at the time, I was supervising our gang unit. A law enforcement related email had come through that, hey, this production company is looking to do a television show, and which was then Live PD. Tulsa was one of the first departments that was a part of it. So we were on it from episode one on a Friday night for 2 hours. And they rode along with us in our gang unit. And the show built up and went to 3 hours on Friday night. Then it went to a Friday and a Saturday night for 3 hours. Each agency has a contract to be on for a certain length of time. Our contract was up in Tulsa, and the producers had invited me to come be a guest on set in New York back in, I think, January of 2017. Fluke deal just happened to work out, and you know, now I'm sitting here doing a radio show.
And you were doing real commentary on real crimes as they took place and law enforcement, right?
That's correct. Yeah, both on Live PD as well as On Patrol Live, which is another show that's out there doing live police work. And, you know, they're with 8 different police departments around the country. And we, just kind of give that analysis of why the officers are doing what they're doing and break down policies.
Here's Sean Larkin talking to a store owner. This is on 24/7, cut 32.
Sergeant.
When the gunman steps inside, he points his rifle directly at 80-year-old Craig Cope. Without hesitation, Cope grabs a weapon of his own, a 12-gauge shotgun, and takes aim. From the doorway, the gunman's accomplice gives a warning.
Shotgun.
But it's way too late. The muzzle blast from Cope's shotgun sends papers flying and a hail of buckshot into the intruder's left arm.
Wow. So that's a lot going on there.
It is. It's just as I mentioned right there. These are citizens that are fighting back against some of these criminals that are out there. And these were a group of guys that had come in and do an armed robbery with an elderly gentleman. If I remember correctly, he was around 70 years old, working in a convenience store by himself. Suspect comes in with an AR-15. The guy fights back using a shotgun and shoots the suspect.
And that's the type of thing we'll be seeing. How long will this be? 90-minute shows?
They're 30-minute episodes, premiering every single Friday night right now. We've got 12 in the bag, and fingers crossed the viewers enjoy them, and we'll bring them a lot more, I promise.
Do you miss being out on the street?
I do. I retired 2 years ago, just under 25 years, on the job. Listen, one of my buddies, he sent me a message that's on the police department. He's on duty right now actually listening to this. So hello to Eric. I miss the guys. That's what I miss. I miss chasing bad guys, getting those guys that are responsible in custody. But the job has changed a lot. I'm happy that I've done it. I would do it again. But I'm enjoying retirement right
now as
well.
What part of it would you find the hardest to deal with now if you were to put the uniform on?
When I first came on, didn't matter if it was out on the street or in court, the police officer was kind of taken at his word. And now it's the exact opposite. We have to fight from the very beginning of the traffic stop all the way up through your time in the courtroom that you're not the bad guy, that you're the person that's out here doing things right, because, you know, the fingers are pointed at us now.
You saw the thing with Danny Penny in the subway?
Yes.
So you have a 24-year-old ex-Marine, just wants to go to night school, go to part-time, and he sees something goes wrong. And like maybe you might say to yourself, I'm not in the cop anymore, but I got to help people. He did. I know people that know him. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. You're not going to find anything in his background. So the guy ends up dying. And now they're going for murder, too, on him.
I like to think that situation would be different maybe in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But I'm just going to give the generic answer. That's what court is for. And hopefully with his defense team getting in front of a jury that understands, hey, you can't expect citizens to just sit back and not step up to help out when needed, which it sounds like is exactly what he did there.
Cops can't be everywhere, especially in a subway.
Absolutely not. You know, listen, the problems in the subway system here in New York City are well documented.
A lot of the stuff is the bad guys aren't in jail. They find out the same people doing the same things over and over again. People say, well, you have a big heart. You got to stop locking people up. What's your reaction to that?
No, it's crazy. You know, the studies that, some of these departments across the country that have their soft on crime policies, everything from not enforcing misdemeanor drug laws to letting violent criminals out. And as I said, I was with the gang unit for the majority of my career at the end there and what we call the crime gun unit. We're going after the worst of the worst. We're going after the ones when people turn the news on in the morning when they wake up and they see a shooting that happened overnight, a homicide that happened overnight, a robbery that happened overnight. Those are the guys that we're going after. Guess what? That's not the first time these guys are doing these type of crimes. So those smaller drug crimes that we can get guys in custody for, the assaults, the possession of a firearm that they can just bond out, with $500, for a felon with a firearm, that's ridiculous. That's the problem. We keep dealing with these same small percentage of violent individuals over and over again because the courts let them back out.
Do you think that live PD would be on right now if it wasn't for the George Floyd riots?
Absolutely.
And they just took the number one syndicated show in the country down, and because they thought America didn't want to see cops anymore.
No, you know what? I one of the things I learned from that show being on television, no matter who I interacted with, whether I was traveling across the country, back and forth between Oklahoma and New York, I was out in Tulsa, I was on duty in Tulsa. And listen, when I'm on duty, I'm not dealing with, I'm dealing with the criminal element. I mean, that was my job. Those guys all watched the show. The bad guys did. They talked about it. They loved it. They were disappointed it came off. And I mean that. They loved watching it. So it was the number one show every Friday and Saturday night. 2 years in a row, it was the number one DVR television show out of all of television. I imagine the show financially did very well for that network. But there was one reason only that it was pulled off. And in my personal opinion, transparency is what everybody says they want when it comes to law enforcement. The people that are generally anti-police, that's what they want. They want transparency. I don't know how it can be more transparent than a live police show showing you exactly what's happening Absolutely. In real time out on the streets.
Right. It was just crazy. And just next thing you know, the number one show is shelved. Do you believe that things could come back to a more normalcy, that we overcorrected for some reason?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's still a little ways off, but I think that the tide is starting to turn. One of the most difficult things that's well documented over the last year or two is the low number of officers coming into this profession, the low number of people coming into the profession right now and trying to retain good police officers. So I think we're going to have just a little bit of a lull, I guess, trying to build up good experience investigators, street cops and stuff like that until that gets replaced.
The numbers going through the roof in New York City. And by the way, I don't know how many serial killer investigations you did, but I guess gangs sometimes they get in a bit of a roll. In Gilgo, 10 years later, they find the guy. They found beer cans, evidently, DNA. Matched it up, made the move. What are your thoughts about that?
Hey, technology nowadays, pretty much any bad guy, even going back to talking about Crime Cam 24/7, so many of these things now get captured, whether it's on video, DNA, things like Ancestry now that people are getting caught because of that, because someone else in your family.
Yeah, criminals aren't doing that like they used to.
No, man. It's mind-boggling. But listen, it also goes kudos to those investigators, those homicide detectives there, that don't give up. Obviously, if you've got 10 cases connected to somebody, they're never going to give up on it. But every single department, especially a larger department across the country, they have cold cases. Right. And there's generally a detective or two. That's their job. They're still working on these old cases. And as these type of things come available, you hope they can solve these crimes or bring closure to those families.
Sean Sticks Larkin's with us, host of Crime Cam 24/7 on Fox Nation. So check it out. But I got to ask you about the FBI hearings. I know it's political when you were the director. When you see what's in the Twitter files, when you see what the FBI was up to, how much great work they are doing. What was your first reaction when you find out how they were all over Twitter and social media and forcing things to come down?
Well, we could probably tie a whole nother episode up on my dealings with the FBI.
I'm not good.
Not a big fan. No, we had a corruption investigation in the Tulsa Police Department that went on back in 2009, 2010. Saw some things the way they operated, and you know, if there was somebody in their sights, things that they could do. So I myself am not a fan, nor am I surprised by some of the other stuff we're still seeing.
Is it possible to clean it up?
You know, it's possible, but it starts from the top. I mean, you know, I think everything from, you know, the people you've got obviously got in the White House to new leadership, you know, both within the FBI, which is going to trickle down through the agents themselves and so forth. The same thing, I think, for any municipal police department or sheriff's department.
If I found that law enforcement was even pulling for a certain party, even if I agree with that party, I'd be outraged. Like, what are you doing? Because I know it could switch in a matter of a second. You can't be doing that.
Yeah, I can tell you, out of the thousands upon thousands of car stops or what we call ped checks, I've never asked anybody their political affiliation.
Right.
If you're right, you're right. And if you're wrong, you're wrong.
Right.
Bottom line.
Might have a bumper sticker, could give it away, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, there's a few of those out there, yeah.
Well, congratulations on the show. I'm so glad you're here. It was great having you on. You were promoting the other show, and Dan Abrams does a great job.
Love
great
that
vision.
Guy.
And he's a big fan of yours. Sean Stiggs Larkin. You can follow him at Sean underscore C underscore Larkin.
Yes, sir.
All right. Make sure you watch Fox Nation tonight. Episode from last week is still up, and then you have this week dropping.
Yes, sir. 6 o'clock tonight, East Coast.
Back in a moment.
This weekend, check out Brian's new show on Fox News Channel.
His new Saturday show lets him ruin your weekends, too.
Take it easy, Gutfeld.
That really hurts.
One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. More of Brian coming up. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I don't know how you can be a leader and not be completely accessible to your people. I do not believe you can be a leader and not be accessible to your people. To the extent it works, I'm okay with it. If it doesn't work, I don't mind getting rid of it either. And we're not going to make that decision because we're pandering to employees. That is not the way to build a great company. I completely understand why someone doesn't want to commute an hour and a half every day. Totally got it. Doesn't mean they have to have a job here either.
So that is my belief 100%. Jamie Dimon, who I haven't met, but I hope to. J.P. Morgan, don't agree with him in China, says he wants a broker between the nations. But I do agree with him that you got to be in the office. You have to interact with people. You have to look at a boss and say, wow, this person's motivating me. This person's not. I want to be able to compare myself to my peers, go out to lunch, and then find out what else operate, you know, what else is going on in someone's life. If they're going to be dedicated to a company, they got to know the company cares about them. But there's something about being face-to-face that I think matters. And I just think that sometimes they were talking about the future in which there's not going to be any traffic because people are going to stay home and do their own thing, and they'll be just as effective. And I think people were working from home, and everyone was happy with Zoom. Got it. But when you have the opportunity to go back to work, I love the fact that people are going back to work. And I love the fact that he said, look, I know you don't want to commute an hour and a half, but maybe this is not the right place for you. And I like that answer. Because it's an honor. You're supposed to work for somebody, in theory, that's going to benefit their company. And if you benefit their company, they'll keep you around because everyone fundamentally is selfish. How can that person help my team? Well, this, you know, he's a little arrogant. He shows up late all the time, but, man, he scores goals in the clutches, or he always knows how to hit a home run, or he's very good in the glove. You have an asset. You're an asset to your team, your company. And now all of a sudden, all the players and all the employees have all the power. I think we got to get back to a better balance on that, and I think you'll get more productivity. Also, so many people say, I don't want to work. You know, I don't like my job. I don't really enjoy it because you don't feel appreciated, but you don't feel a sense of worth through it. And a lot of times that sense of worth is coming from impressing your manager, impressing the vice president, impressing the president. You knew the hierarchy. Other people say, I can't handle having anyone over me. I'm going to take a risk and open up my own deli, my own dry cleaner. I'm going to get my own landscaping company. I want to be my own boss and put up with my own problems, but at least call my own shots. Everybody, different things, but now at least it's optional. Let's find out if there's more to know.
More to know.
All right, this transgender cyclist wins the women's race to prove that I guess they're the best. But get this, turns around and rips other trans athletes. So this guy's name is, man, I don't know, I'm confused. man woman is Nawa Rin, a biological male, says she felt at just the age of 7 that she should be born a female. Okay, now 37, transitioned last year, and now officially recognized as a woman under South Korea law. A lifelong cyclist, she wanted to continue racing. However, Na says she does not feel not to compete with herself. She wanted the euphoric feeling of victory, but not to prove a point. She said she comes from a Christian family, faced negative comments about her transition, but little did she know that what she did has been planning for upwards of 2 years. She wanted to race against women to show that the biological men are physically superior to biological women. So how does that help? So now you know that. Bad example. Next. Nearly 1 in 10 U.S. children have been diagnosed with some developmental disorder. Kids as ages 3 to 17 are diagnosed with any developmental disability. So in 2007, 7.4% had disability. In 2021, 8.5%, and it's growing. You think this is pandemic-related, Alice?
I think it's probably pandemic, but also I think just you're able to diagnose more. More people are having their kids diagnosed, and I feel like back in the day when someone was just like slightly socially awkward, now they're on the spectrum.
Next, a strike in Hollywood. Actors joins writers in strike, bringing Hollywood to a standstill. All right, they might have some legitimate concerns. Maybe they don't. So far, they say the first time in 43 years, bringing the $134 billion American movie and television business to a halt, the actors are now striking. My feeling is exact wrong time. For 2 years, you couldn't work. Now no one's going to the movies anymore. And now you're going to tell people we're not making anything, making people stay away from the movies again, maybe forever. Bad timing. Big time. If you ask me, Brian Kilmeade Show. Make sure you watch One Nation Saturday, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on the Fox News Channel.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.